Hello, everyone, and welcome again to another episode of M365 Voice. And my name is Mike Manarani. Got Antonio with us.
Hi, everyone. I'm Antonio Mayo.
And I'm Sarah Hazy.
And today we are going to pick another question from Sarah's months.
Sarah's amazing Microsoft Ignite Podcast Center mug. It still has questions. Make sure to submit your questions online. We're pulling a question at random. So far, I just want to say we have successfully done this three times. This is our fourth time of pulling out a question at random and seeing what we can make of it in 20 minutes or less. Are you ready?
Ready.
We are.
Okay, here we go. Here's our question. How do you protect your data in Microsoft 365? A quick walkthrough of the different security settings that are available to you in M365.
Oh, wow.
There's nothing quick about that.
Yeah, that's one loaded question.
Yep. Protecting your data in Microsoft 365, what are your security settings and options?
Well, that tends to be an area that I do a lot of work in, so I could maybe start. But like I said, there's nothing quick about that question, so let's see where to start. So, different people like to start in different places when it comes to security settings for M365. Personally, I like to start at the authentication level. So I like to start with making sure the process of users authenticating to the platform is secure. And that takes a number of things. You can go all the way down to things like password policies, password complexity, that type of thing. That's getting fairly low level. Certainly, if you're in M365, you're synchronizing identities, you are authenticating to the Office 365 platform. I like to go as far, and this is going to get technical really fast, I like to go as far as turning off the legacy authentication protocols to make sure that you're using modern authentication. That has a lot of benefits to it. There are a lot of holes in the legacy authentication protocols that we've seen attackers with our clients try to leverage to attack accounts within Office 365 or get access that they shouldn't have. So I like to turn off legacy authentication protocols, and you do that, you specifically turn those off or deny those. So that's that. What else? Authentication. And then I like to implement, of course, multi-factor authentication. To me, multi-factor authentication is important. It's a good thing to do, but it is not the be-all and end-all of identity protection. I find some people think I've implemented MFA, I have solved all my security issues, but that is not the case. You can't treat MFA as a Band-Aid that solves all your security issues. It's still important to have really good hygiene and management of user identities. But it is important also to make sure that MFA is in place so that you protect against user identities being stolen. So those are a couple of places that I would start with. Yourselves, what do you guys think?
I have an interesting question for you. So in your experiences, how many of the companies that you work with have issues with things like basic core identity management and password ownership issues do you see with the employees? And I mean Active Directory passwords, where they are letting them expire instead of changing them on whatever company iteration that you have. So if it's, 2 months or 6 months, that they don't get them changed in time and then they have to call the help desk for help. Or they fat finger their password and they get locked out and then they're sitting there for however long it takes for their account to automatically unlock, or they're calling the help desk. Do you see a lot of companies having issues with just that basic level of employees managing their identity and their password?
Just about every large company I see has those issues. The notion of password expiry was a common security practice for a very long time. Back to when I started in the security world in the late 90s, that was when we first introduced that concept. I remember when that concept first came out, actually. And it's still heavily practiced today. What we have seen in a recent trend that helps to address that is enforce more complex passwords, longer passwords. Sorry, I take that back. Not more complex passwords, longer passwords, and a much longer time for expiry. So, for example, our firm has recently changed to requiring you to have a 16-character long password, which is hard to figure out. To figure out a password that's that long, it actually takes some work to get that, to get a good password in place that you'll remember. But we have a 2-year expiry period now on our password.
Oh,
yeah. So that's fairly, I think fairly advanced, or fairly just a new trend that is, I don't know what the right word is, but.
I would like to talk about that though, because sure. I actually think that that's really interesting, because I think if you look historically, companies thought that they were being more secure when they made people change their passwords more often. So yeah. Let's go down to every 2 months or every 3 months, every 4 months, people had to change their passwords. But in reality, what I think that that caused is a false sense of security. And increasingly, people are writing down their passwords. They're noting it in insecure areas. They're forgetting their passwords and having to call the help desk. And so what's interesting is that at Ignite last year, Ignite 2019, and I know that these sessions are publicly available for viewing now, Microsoft had some very interesting sessions on either going passwordless or going to passwords that never expire or have a very long expiration, like the 2-year that you were just talking about, Antonio. And this is, I think, becoming a really big issue for a lot of big companies right now.
Agreed. Agreed. So you're right. Like the trend became where every service suddenly wanted you to have a password, wanted to have a different password. People would basically repeat their password in lots of different services. And that's called password stuffing, or credential stuffing, it was referred to, where you use the same password over and over and over. So if I happen to hack your password in some service that's not secure, it's very likely that now I have your password for your work account or for your bank account or for something else, because people, the trend was use the same password everywhere. And then when they expired every 3 months, what people would do was, you know, something one, something two, something three, something four, basically use the same pattern with a changing digit on the end, which really hampered the security of logging in, of your authentication. So it is a real trend now to shift to longer expiry. Still some expiry I think is worthwhile, but much longer, perhaps a longer password, but allow people to make it something that they will easily remember, right? So, you know, what's starting to go away, I think, is the notion of complex passwords where you have to have a number and you can't have words and you have to have a letter and it can't be the last 47 passwords you used, because that drives people to make something that's just can't be easily remembered. So you end up writing it down, or it's a pattern with, you know, an increasing digit on the end.
So what about the Authenticator app? Where does that fit in that equation?
So the Authenticator app is fabulous. If you're going to implement MFA, that tends to be our primary recommendation over SMS text messages. And it works remarkably well. SMS text messages are still good, but the Authenticator app is remarkable how fast it suddenly pops up and says, oh, you need to authenticate. And then you use your fingerprint and then the service lets you in.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the number one. If you're, when you implement MFA, that tends to be the number one recommendation. If you can, use the Authenticator app. And if you can't, go to SMS text messages.
Yeah. And obviously we can go beyond right now. So we've talked about the password and how you can protect your identity. And I am in and I am authenticated legally. I am an employee. I have an account. I have a license. I'm working with the content. Now it comes down to the content level, right?
Okay.
And then I'm working with the content. How do I protect the content, whether it is unintentional mistakes or intentionally I'm trying to leak information? There's a lot of things that we can cover there to make sure that these kind of incidents don't happen.
That's right. Sorry, go
ahead.
I was
going to jump in with one of my favorite ones that I think gets overlooked all the time. And it's, I feel like we could talk for 3 days about this topic and not even cover everything. But one of the things that I am shocked by is the amount of companies that have E3 or E5 licenses. They have opened up Power Automate for everyone in their organization to be able to create flows, and they have not locked down the third-party data connectors. So Power Automate is great, and it comes with all of these hundreds of third-party connectors, which are fantastic, and you want to make sure that you're using them. But do you, a lot of people don't think about the fact that you can connect to Box, my personal Google Drive, my personal OneDrive account, my Gmail account, and everything else. And if you don't lock down some of those third-party connectors that you don't want your employees using, you suddenly have collapsed your four walls of data security around your organization.
Yep. It takes me all of 30 seconds to create a flow that every time my CEO emails me, it would automatically get posted to Twitter. And think about how bad of a security issue that would be. You're completely right, Sarah, like 100%. People don't make use of the data security policies in Flow, in Power Automate, in Power Apps. And those are really important for ring fencing those connectors so that you can't have third party data connectors mixed with your internal connectors in the same flow.
Right. And I've seen those in real life. When I do a lot of tenant to tenant migration, and I do assessment of what kind of tools they use. And when I go into the flow and I do an export of the report of all the flows, and I see a lot of personal flows that will have connectors, whether they're connected with an Office 365, just moving things around, or to outside, a lot of Dropbox connectors.
And you should have a process in place to be able to evaluate, because there are some of those third-party connectors that are justifiable that you need for business purposes. My favorite one to talk about, or my two favorite ones, ServiceNow and Salesforce. A lot of companies are customers of ServiceNow and Salesforce. You may want to create flows that when you have an incident created in ServiceNow, for example, that you have the ability to automate pulling some of that data into Power Automate from an Office 365 perspective and taking action. But then you should look at those connectors. You should make sure that those are appropriately reviewed and then enabled for use at your organization. But do it practically, pragmatically, on a one-by-one basis of evaluating those connectors before you enable them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, completely agree. What we've done with some clients is we'll use the Flow or Power Automate management connector to actually build flows that will automate some of that management. So as people within the organization create new Power Automate flows, we will add an administrator automatically to be someone who has access to it. And then once that's done, then draw data from those flows so we know what connectors are people using throughout the organization, and we can manage that in somewhat of an automated way. That's a great connector to make use of. One thing I would add to the whole authentication discussion is the next step that we would go to then is using conditional access, Azure conditional access, to configure some policies. So for example, only enforce multi-factor authentication when you're not connected to the corporate network. That way, if people are on the corporate network, they can just connect in automatically, right? Because there is a bit of a, I don't want to say convenience factor, but a bit of a productivity factor to multi-factor authentication. I get prompted for multi-factor authentication 20 times a day. And I hate it every single time, even though I'm a security person, because it slows me down. So being able to minimize that a little bit and focus it to the times where it's really needed is important, I think. And you can do that even more afterwards if you go to the next tool I would suggest people look at, which is Microsoft Cloud App Security. Now, conditional access, not too hard to configure. Cloud App Security is a really big tool. So I wouldn't say it's the next tool that I would look at, but it's a super powerful one that if you have the license for it, you should look at some point because it's got a lot of great security capabilities.
Yeah, I think that tool comes with EMS E5. Is that correct?
It does. There is also an add-on license for it, or if you get the M365 E5, you get that as well. Yeah.
Then we can get down to the data level from an MIP perspective and DLP perspective and sharing from SharePoint and OneDrive.
You can
touch on that a bit before we end.
Sure. So if you don't want me jumping in, MCAS has three, at a high level, three really key capabilities. One, it alerts you when shadow IT is being used in the organization. It does that by evaluating firewall logs that are shipped up to it. Two, it can enforce really granular policies. So to your point, Mike, if content is being communicated that's not classified with MIP, you can enforce a classification on it at that point, or you can enforce other policies as it's moving through the transport in email or as it's being saved to SharePoint sites, for example. And then three, you can sanction and unsanction apps. So you can control which internal apps and third-party apps people are using in your organization.
Exactly.
Yeah. That is my favorite tool in the security suite.
Excellent. So DLP, for example, is another option if you want to make sure that sensitive information is not leaked outside. You can take control from, if I'm trying to email any document that has any sensitive information, I can take action against it. I can block it. I can inform the actual user. If I try even to upload content somewhere that I'm not supposed to upload there. So that's another way to do that protection.
Yeah, DLP is good. The bane of DLP is false positives, though. Right. Yeah. What you're going to do is you're going to configure policies that are looking for sensitive data types, and those are looking for other keywords or regular expressions or combinations of the two, and using somewhat of a confidence rating to figure out, yes, I have something I have to protect. The challenge is there's a lot of information out there that looks like sensitive information that's not necessarily sensitive information. The classic example that I use is that European telephone numbers notoriously look like social security numbers in the US. And you often run into that scenario where someone has in their signature a European telephone number and it's telling you you've got a social security number. So right. It does require some tuning, but it is a good tool.
Okay.
Yeah.
One thing also, a lot of companies oversee that the sharing capabilities from SharePoint and OneDrive, that mm-hmm. keep it open for anyone. So we have different three levels of security of sharing capabilities, of sharing a specific folder or a document, whether it's in OneDrive or SharePoint, and they keep it at anyone. And anyone is the least secure way. So right. You can go and share a content, a document, and say anyone. Yes, you can put an expiry date against it, you can put a password, but guess what? If I share it with you, you can share it with the rest of the world. So everyone will have access to that through that shared link. So I always go and recommend organizations to make sure that only people in your organizations is the option to share the document with. And they can share it with specific people that would give you a secure link with a token that would be emailed to you. So a little bit more secure way of sharing content if you decide to share content with outside the organization.
Agreed. We usually recommend you turn off the anonymous access, the just a plain link, and that you require people to authenticate. And I know a few people have argued against turning that off. I've seen a lot of public stuff arguing against it, but it's more about reducing risk, I think, for an organization, because it's really easy if you let people to send out anonymous links. That tends to be the simplest method to share stuff.
And I think that's really important, is that you as a company need to determine your risk profile, and that should drive every decision that you make about your security settings, from both the identity level all the way down to the content specific level. Make sure that you're aware of the industry requirements that you're in. Make sure that you're aware geographically of what the requirements are that you have to adhere to, and then decide within that frame, what is your risk posture? What is an acceptable level of risk and what is not? And make sure that your security settings are finely tuned to make sure that they help you achieve that.
Exactly. A couple of the tools that I've been looking at recently that are really good for that are the Compliance Manager in the M365 Compliance Center, and then Compliance Score, because those really help you to assess, what do I really need to comply with? Is it an internal policy? Is it a regulatory framework? And then how am I complying with that? And how am I doing over time with that compliance level, which relates to a good degree to risk? So yeah, 100%. I think that's a great way to look at it.
I think one other thing we haven't talked about as well is the secure score. What's your opinion on the secure score and how when you run it? And obviously it's not going to fix things for you, but it's going to give you a report of what things you should address and how do you rate based on what you've configured so far against others that have similar size than your organization. What's your opinion on that?
I assume you're asking me, Mike?
Both of you.
Sarah, thoughts on that one?
love the secure score. What I think my default response is, don't get too hung up on a number. I think the number is an inclination, or it gives you an indication of where you are from a thresholding perspective compared to where you want to be. What I don't want to see is companies that say, hey, there's something magical about hitting this particular number. Let's shoot for this particular number. I think it should be used more as an indicator. We have taken steps and we have mitigated our risk. We're moving in the right direction, or we're within the right zone, rather than being hung up on a particular digit.
Yeah, I like to tell people the same thing, to treat it as a relative score and not any kind of absolute measure of your security level. I was really happy when Office 365 Secure Score became Microsoft 365 Secure Score, because they started taking signals not only from what security features in Office 365 you're using, but also signals from how you're managing your identities, how you're managing your devices, how you're managing your apps. And that turned it into a much broader set of policies and settings that are evaluated. So I think the recommendations became much more meaningful in that way. But yeah, I completely agree with Sarah. Treat it as a relative score that tells you how you're doing over time, and don't try to hit a particular score. Don't get hung up on that score being too high either, because the higher it goes, the more you affect people's ability to collaborate and share information internally, and you just make it harder for people to work.
Very true.
Yeah. And I think that goes all the way back to those MFA settings, because you have to find that happy medium between more secure, and now people are so hampered that you're losing employee productivity time like crazy and just requiring them to re-authenticate so consistently. So there has to be a balance that you have to get to there.
Yeah. And I think that takes you back to your last point, Sarah, of basing it on risk, because figuring out which of all these features, and we've only touched on a few, figuring out which of all these security features you're going to implement is really needs to be about assessing your risk, like you said, and balancing that with productivity and making sure that overall you're operating in a secure and productive way.
I feel like we just took an 80-mile-an-hour tour through security settings in M365.
Yeah, well, it's a big topic, but it was a really good question, though. Very, very good question. So with that, thank you both for being here, and it was awesome questions. And again, for who's watching us on the podcast, don't forget to submit questions. We are picking two questions every week. We're going to publish the podcast on a weekly basis. And thank you for watching, and have a good night.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thanks, everyone.